welcome back, one and all, to the Best Seat at the Track, the Front Stretch Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Davey Siegel, and we got a lot to talk about today. Martinsville Track President Clay Campbell is on with us to discuss what goes into preparation for the penultimate race of the season, whether or not he wants Martinsville to have the championship race. Spoiler alert, his answer may surprise you. And of course, some hot dog talk, not only with him, also with my brother Mike Neff, who's going to help recap Kansas and preview the paperclip. Let's get this episode started.
Boogity, boogity, boogity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. Kyle Larson doing Kyle Larson things for the ninth time this season. Mike Neff, first of all, good to see you. I have missed you, and I'm going to miss you this weekend, because whenever I go to Martinsville, I always remember that one time when we dumpster dove for hot dogs, which I told Clay Campbell about. I digress. But let's stay on the topic at hand. Kansas, Kyle Larson, win number 9, third in a row. He is just putting together an incredible season numbers-wise and just so impressive on multiple different levels. It's amazing what this guy is doing now that he has competitive equipment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to throw Chip Ganassi under the bus. But I mean, the bus is already there in part. I mean, it's not
hey,
like
the bus is taking him out of the sport, so you can do whatever you want.
Exactly. There's never been a doubt that Kyle Larson is an amazing driving talent. But seeing what he's done in the last, you know, handful of years has just taken it to a whole nother level. I mean, we always knew he was what he was on dirt. But he's done things on asphalt that you didn't expect. And now this year, I mean, it's just you. I've heard multiple people say they're tired of him winning. And that kind of criticism is reserved for Dale Earnhardt, Jeff Gordon, Richard Petty, Jimmy Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking icons of the sport. And to have him getting that kind of accolade or criticism this early on since getting to this level is impressive.
Yeah. He's the first driver since Dale Earnhardt, I think in the late 80s, to win 3 races in succession multiple times in the same season. If he's able to win one more race this year, he'll be the first guy since Jimmy Johnson back in 07 to win double-digit races in a season. Again, I mean, not to, you know, pour salt in an open wound here, but we understand Chip Ganassi Racing is not the top tier team. Like, they are around there, they're hovering, but now they're getting out of the sport. And right now we saw Kurt Busch had a good run at Kansas. Ross Chastain, he's run well this season. But Chip Ganassi is kind of your B tier team. And that's no disrespect to them. They would probably tell you the same thing. To put a driver of Larson's caliber, who we've heard and we've seen for all these years, has the raw talent. Now he's got the best race car in the entire garage. It's no wonder that when you put those two together, plus a hungry crew chief who's young, who has innovative ideas like Cliff Daniels, this partnership is just absolutely taking off and going to the moon. I don't really think this should be a surprise, although if you told me before the season that Larson would be a 9-time winner, I'd tell you to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit on a good point there. I don't know that Cliff Daniels is getting as much credit as he deserves for what's gone on with them this season. Because, yeah. I mean, Larson has always had a very subdued demeanor. But Cliff takes subdued to a whole nother level.
Jack Knaus 2.0.
Yeah, you never see him or hear him raise his voice or look like he's sweating at all. And it is just... it is perfect for Larson, because Larson is so cool and so calculated in how he gives his evaluation of the car. And Cliff is exactly the same way coming back at him. And even at those rare moments where Larson seems like he's getting a little tense, Cliff just brings him back and is like, lays it out. Here's a plan. Here's what we're doing. Here's how it's going to work out. And it does. And it just, the combination of those two, I mean, barring another milk and cookies meeting, I see them doing this for who knows, a decade or more.
Yeah, it's a lethal combination. Something about Mr. H and putting the right people together in the right situations, he really has a knack for it. And let's talk about some other playoff guys that have run into trouble and that did at Kansas. Blaney hits the wall late, had a flat tire before that. Martin Truex Jr. had a flat tire in the middle of the race. Brad Keselowski had some issues. Kyle Busch was screaming his head off on the radio. What is it about this round that seems to give the playoff guys specifically so much trouble? Because we've seen this happen before, right? We've seen playoff contenders run into issues and have a lot of pressure and seem to maybe crunch under it. But Joey Logano said it best. I don't think that we've seen this amount, the quantity of issues that the playoff drivers have had in this round of eight that we have the past couple weeks. What do you think it is about this round and this year?
You just said it, the round of eight. I mean, you're at the point where you have the eight best drivers in the sport. When you start the playoffs, you've got 16. Let's face it, Michael McDowell and Kurt Busch were most likely not going to make it past the first round, right, or at best the second round. I mean, but you're at the point now where you have eight guys, and any one of those eight guys with the right circumstances between now and Phoenix wins a championship. And they know that they cannot have missteps, and the pressure ratchets up. And that's where, I mean, you heard about it with Chase Elliott at the end of the race. He was going for it. Once he made contact with the wall, he had to look at the big picture. And the big picture was, you know, let's not ruin our whole championship chase, right, to try and gain one spot for a win.
The big picture was, I'm 32 points above the cut line. Let me not try to give that all away for something that doesn't necessarily matter.
Right. And Blaney was the thing, same way. I mean, he's going for it. And had he not done that, the whole playoff picture looked different. I mean, when he fell back, it brought two, if not three, other drivers into the mix that really were not in it up until that point. So, I mean, I just feel like you've got, and we talk about them being the best stock car drivers in the world all the time, but right now with this package and these drivers, the room for error is so small that it ratchets that pressure up. And let's face it, you're looking at going to Martinsville. You need to have as much of a cushion as you can get there, because anything can happen there.
It's amazing what pressure does to people. Some of the best athletes in the world and their disciplines, but pressure always seems to win out. And we'll get to more some of Martinsville talk and some playoff talk and what the cut line looks like later on in the show. Let's chat a little bit about the dichotomy that we saw this weekend. And this can open a whole can of worms, so we'll try to be quick on it. But if you want some more thoughts, stay tuned to the podcast. There may be some off-season stuff that pops up and some conversations that we have. You see Formula One go to COTA. Over 360,000 fans over the course of the weekend flocked there. Feels like a huge event. Atmosphere looked electric. Racing was really good. Celebrities on the grid. Just felt like a huge event. Pomp and circumstance. And then you have the dichotomy of the week before. NASCAR raced in the state of Texas. Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch are on the record this week at Kansas saying that there was a problem because there seemed to be a big lack of attendance there. The same thing was at Kansas, and Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch also both said that there needs to be some more of an event feel with NASCAR races, and it seems like Formula One's done a really good job of that. You can point a lot of the credit to Drive to Survive, but also they do a great job of kind of marketing their product and going to places where their event can shine. Just what are your thoughts about the overall dichotomy of Formula One looking how it did and being how it was this weekend in the United States? And then NASCAR, the last couple weeks, being what it was in the United States.
I mean, how many Formula One races do you have in North America a year?
Two? Let's see. Two, three, yeah.
Three. Yeah. You have 38 cup races. So, I mean, it's a matter of, yes, they made it into an event. And don't get me wrong, NASCAR races used to be an event. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it now, it's not the same. Go to any race, I mean, Daytona 500 on down, the vendor midway and the fan zone is nowhere near what it was before. Part of that is the sport, part of it's COVID. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that you don't have the corporate involvement outside of the racetrack like you used to. With a Formula One race, you only have, I mean, in the United States, you have one opportunity all year to hit those Formula One fans. And I'm proud to see it. I'm glad to see it that Formula One is actually getting a fan base in the United States. Yeah. There's always been that niche of people that got up and went to some bar at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning to watch Formula One races.
Yeah.
But it wasn't hundreds of thousands of people. And the bottom line is that they are embracing a new fan base, and they are targeting towards that fan base, and it's paying off. And I'm sure there are changes that NASCAR has got to do. They're doing it with the car. They're doing it with some other things, but they really need to draw that corporate presence back in and turn the whole weekend into an event again. And I mean, do we need practice and qualifying? I don't know, but it sure gave you something else to market to the people.
Yeah, it sure would. And like you said, right, there's 2 to 3 North American races on the F1 calendar a year. Next year, America itself is getting 2, and the year following, there's rumors that there could be a 3rd. And all the Formula One drivers seem to really welcome the American fan base, and they love the atmosphere. So that remains to be seen, kind of what the landscape is going to look like in terms of the fan base for Formula One versus NASCAR, if there really is a head-to-head competition. That remains to be seen, but definitely worth watching moving forward. Did you see his interviews when he was doing a Southern accent too? Did you happen to see those?
I don't know if that was a Southern accent, but it was an attempt at one. But yeah,
yes, it was his attempt. The Australian mix with the Southern was very interesting.
Yeah. Let's face it, Ricardo is probably one of the best personalities in all of motorsports, not just Formula One, but by far in Formula One. He is way above everybody else.
Yeah. All right, Neff, stick around. We're going to get a quick stage break out of the way. Then we'll talk to Clay Campbell of Martinsville Speedway about some hot dogs. What do you say?
I love it.
This week's stage break is unsponsored. But fear not, everybody. If you would like to associate your brand or your company with us here at the Front Stretch Podcast or any of the fine folks here at Front Stretch, we are open to working with you. And advertising is wide open. All you got to do is send an email to sales, S-A-L-E-S, at frontstretch.com. We will get you hooked up, whether it's on the podcast, on some video content, on any specific articles you would like. Contact sales at frontstretch.com. We'll get you hooked up and make it worth your while. Let's throw it over to our chat with Clay Campbell, president of the Paperclip, Martinsville Speedway. Clay has been around this game for so long, and he probably knows more about racing in his entire pinky than most people know in their entire lives. We talked about a lot of different things, how Martinsville goes about securing a marquee date on the NASCAR calendar, if the preparation for a playoff race is different versus the regular season, how his relationship is with different industry stakeholders, and also his thoughts on trying to make NASCAR events more of just that, an event. And of course, some hot dog talk. And my co-host Mike Neff's name may or may not have been mentioned. You may just need to stick around to find out. Here's our conversation with Martinsville Speedway's Clay Campbell. Pleasure to welcome on to the show today a legend of the game. It is Martinsville Speedway's Clay Campbell. I have so many questions for you, my friend. But first of all, it's a big week for multiple reasons. Penultimate race of the Cup Series, Xfinity Series, and Truck Series seasons, and you are at the center of it, so things must be pretty busy right now at Martinsville Speedway.
Hey, it's busy, but this is what we do. This is what we live for, and, you know, the key to this weekend, we got all of our fans back. We're getting back to normal because we went the other way last year, so it's great to have the fans back. They're what make this business go around and around. So looking forward to a great weekend. You mentioned it, the penultimate for the trucks, the Xfinity and Cup. It's going to be an outstanding weekend on the track and off, so we're looking forward to it.
I was there the past couple races or a few races when there was no fans or limited capacity. Just didn't feel right. I mean, Martinsville is one of those places, as you know, where fans make the atmosphere what it is. And to not have them there for the first race under the lights, too, when I think Truex was doing donuts under the lights and they were strobing, it didn't feel right. So it's only fitting that for a big race like this, it's going to be a packed house.
You're right. I mean, you said it with all the fans, all the excitement and the energy in the air when they're packed in here. It's just you can't replace it. And to see it done with less than that, it's deflating. So we're really excited to see the fans back. the emotions on the racetrack. And I think you'd probably see more of that in on the competition side with fans in the track than you would if nobody's up there. You know, they like performing in front of fans as well. And we like working for the fans. So this weekend's going to be special. Can't wait to see it.
I can't wait either. And it's a marquee date. I mean, NASCAR fans, they know the majors, right? Daytona, Southern 500, Bristol Night Race you can throw in there. But the penultimate race, the cutoff to get to the championship four, it's a big freaking deal. So my question for you as a track president and somebody who is in these conversations, talking with NASCAR and trying to secure marquee dates on the Cup Series schedule, how do you, from a racetrack perspective, go about securing a marquee date for you, your shareholders, everything like that? Because it's not easy to get your racetrack in a place in the season that matters so, so much.
Well, in this case, you know, to put it bluntly, we let the track do the talking for us. That's why we're the penultimate race. It's not anything I say, not anything anybody else says. It's what the track says. Mm-hmm. The type of racing that you'll see here this weekend is phenomenal. You don't see it anywhere else. The up-close battling that goes on this racetrack and has for 74 years, that's what solidifies our place as the penultimate. We don't have to say anything. The track does the talking for us.
Yeah, that's right about that. What goes into preparation for a playoff race compared to preparation for a regular season race? Does anything change? Is there more buttoning up and making sure that all the walls are painted, all the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, or is it kind of just business as usual?
It's really business as usual. Obviously, the importance of this weekend, our PR team, our marketing team, they have a lot more to do because of what's happening. But as far as the operation side of it, what we do here at the track, we give it 110% for everything that we do. So we can't do any more because it's the penultimate than we would do for the first race of the year. We do everything as best we can, provide our fans a great facility to come in, enjoy a great NASCAR event, and provide our competitors a great racetrack to do it on.
Yeah, we let Brent handle most of the work here with us.
Keep him busy.
Yeah, we have to. What do you do during the week to lead up to a race at Martinsville Speedway? Are you busier than usual? Like, take me through an average day, although no day is average as a track president. I know that. But what's on the docket for you as you lead up to this weekend?
It's really, once we get to race week, and I've said it before, race week is what I live for. I don't like the week before because I'd rather get to where, okay, we're on stage now. It's ours.
Right.
So there's a lot going on. Today is my media day. So this is what I've been doing most of the day. But there are a lot of meetings and you know, final things to, as you said earlier, dot the I's, cross the T's, make sure we're on point on everything that we do. But this is what we all work for. This is our Christmas. We enjoy it. Having fans back makes it so much easier. All the hard work that everyone puts into it, but to have the fans back and they get to see what everybody has done. You know, that's what our team does. The competitors show off for the fans. Mm-hmm. We get to show off with our facility. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, a lot of sleepless nights and long days. But hey, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's all worth it when you see those fans in the stands.
Absolutely. And,
as you said, the track action itself speaks for itself. Let's talk about the schedule a little bit more. There's been some talk in recent years, Clay, about the championship race potentially moving, shifting dates. Obviously, you moved from Homestead to Phoenix in the past couple years. Some people after the Bristol Night Race a couple weeks back were saying, man, Bristol would be a pretty cool race for the championship to be decided. I throw Martinsville in that same category. I'm sure that you would not hate that either. So have conversations started or have you had any talk at all with NASCAR about potentially down the road, because I know these things got to be ironed out well in advance, potentially hosting the championship race at Martinsville? Has that been a conversation at all?
No, there's never been a discussion on that. And fortunately, the competition side of our company decides where these races go. But frankly, I'm quite content being the penultimate race. Think about it. You got eight teams coming in here to whittle down to four.
Yeah.
It doesn't get much more competitive or, you know, special than that. And, you know, what you'll see here Sunday and Saturday as well with the Camping World Truck Series and the Xfinity Series, guys making last ditch efforts to get in that final four. So, yeah. You know, I don't have any problem with where I'm at. I'll let NASCAR decide where the championship goes. I think if you ask any track, do you want the championship race? They say, absolutely, bring it. And we would too. But hey, I'm not complaining where we are.
Yeah, you guys are in a pretty good spot right now, all things considered, that's for sure. Yeah. From a track president's perspective, what does your relationship have to be like with drivers, team owners, other track presidents, crew chiefs, specifically, though, when they come to your racetrack? You know, there's certain drivers that are more vocal than others about certain tracks and how they race and what the facility is like. I'm sure, and as we know, right, you've been around this game for so long, and you have unbelievable relationships. So do you cultivate those relationships with all these different stakeholders within the industry? Do those kind of just manifest themselves as you go on, or do you have to actively seek out certain things to make sure that everybody is happy?
Well, you said it, with the long tenure I've had in the sport, I've got a lot of relationships and a lot of friendships and know a lot of these guys quite well. As time goes on, you get newer people in. So, you know, I've got to work harder to build relationships with the newer team owners, newer competitors, the drivers and people like that. But I'm fortunate that a lot of things we do around here, I do have the relationships that I can call on to help us to, you know, whatever we want to do. And also, you've got drivers, like you said, that are more vocal about certain places than others. And hey, that's okay. We've got to have that chatter going on. And we've had it for years and years, because years ago, there were some guys that just couldn't figure this place out. And they're pretty vocal about, you know, they're disdain for it. I don't think you see much of that anymore, but hey, that's okay. Everybody has an opinion, but I'm fortunate to be in the place that I'm at with all the friendships and relationships I have, and hopefully that helps the Speedway in some form or fashion.
There's been also some talk this week since Formula One just wrapped up their American Race Weekend at Circuit of the Americas. A lot of people there, fans in attendance, ton of events going on. And Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch were two of the most vocal that I saw this past week at Kansas, basically saying, we may have a problem on our hands here. You know, Formula One's attracting a lot of fans. Not to say NASCAR is not, but our turnout at Texas wasn't great. Kansas could have been better, right? We need to make these tracks and these races themselves have more of an event feel, a big time atmosphere. You have the job of making that happen for a track like Martinsville Speedway and your guys' staff over there. So what do you think about Denny and Kyle's comments about trying to make races be bigger events and throughout the weekend have more things going on to try to appeal to maybe the casual fan, but also give the hardcore race fan what they want, which is racing and entertainment?
Yeah, well, they make a valid point, but it takes everybody working together to make that happen. The tracks can't do it alone. The drivers can't do it alone. We all have to work together. And I think you'll see more and more of what they're talking about going forward. You know, I go back in the day when you go to some tracks on a Tuesday. You'd be at a track from Tuesday to Sunday, practicing, qualifying, and on and on and on. So now we're down to 2 days, 3 days in some places. But yeah, we provide this weekend. We're providing a lot of things for our fans to do once they get here. Concert in the campground, things in our midway, something to entertain the fan from the time they get here to the time they leave. And that's key. But it takes us all working together to accomplish that.
All right, let's get into the nitty-gritty stuff, some hard-hitting journalism here. When did you have your first Martinsville hot dog, and what was your initial thought?
Oh, let's see, probably when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, I figured it was going to be that long ago.
yeah, it was a long time ago. So
yeah. How many have you had since then? You've probably had your fair share.
I've had my share, but believe it or not, I don't eat a lot.
Oh, really?
I'm too wound up, so I lose weight on race week. So it's good for my diet. I don't eat that much.
Guess there's a positive for that. Well, you made Twitter very happy this morning, though, because you said that for the crew members in the garage area, the hot dog stand will be open. And for myself, who's going to be in the media center, who's driving down on Saturday morning, that makes me very happy as well, because I'm going to have my fair share too.
There you go. You don't have to pull off at a convenience store or fast food restaurant. You just wait till you get here and eat the hot dog.
Do you know if there's a record, whether it's formal or informal, of somebody who's had the most in a day or in a race weekend or anything like that? I don't know if you guys keep track of that.
No, I have heard different things. I'm sure that the competitors keep up with one another on what they do. So I'm sure – I don't even want to know what the record is, frankly.
What's your record?
Probably two.
Oh, come on. You could do better than that,
Clay. Yeah. Like I say, two is more than I would normally eat on race week. So that's that ain't bad.
I will say, I think it was – it might have been actually before COVID. So it must have been 2019, the fall race. We were there late because we were wrapping up everything. And the hot dog stand was closed. I was devastated. So Mike Neff, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but he goes out behind the hot dog stand, sees some in the wrappers. And yes, he took them out of the dumpster. We all toasted to each other at Front Stretch in Martinsville Speedway and had some dumpster hot dogs, and they were still just as good as they were as they come out fresh. So there's that. We had some dumpster hot dogs, and I hope that we will have more this weekend.
a dumpster diving dinner. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You got to do what you got to do, as you know.
You do, Clay. You do.
All right, a couple more questions, and I'll let you run here. Martinsville Speedway, it's an iconic racetrack. You've been in the sport for so, so many years. When you kind of got into this side of things, in terms of on this side of track presidents and doing these things behind the scenes, was there any debate on where you wanted to be, or was it always going to be Martinsville Speedway? Kind of like two peas in a pod and a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I guess I knew from the get-go what I wanted to do or what I needed to do. Now, obviously, growing up in the business, especially being a young person, I wanted to drive a race car. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't grow up around something like this and not want to be on that side of the fence rather than.
And you did for a little while.
And I did. So I was very blessed to get to be on both sides of the fence. After I did that, I know which side of the fence I belong on. And that's why you see me sitting here.
Yes. Well, we look forward to seeing you this weekend, Clay. I can't wait to see the action in person, and the trucks have not raced for, it seems like, a month. So we got three great races, and the late model stock race happened a couple weeks back. So Paperclip always delivers, as do you and your entire team over at the Speedway. So thank you for your time here today. Get to some more media and have some hot dogs before the festivities really ramp up, because you need to have at least one. It's celebratory, okay?
That's a good idea. I'll do that. I promise I'll do that. Good to talk to you. Thank you for hooking up with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you. White Flag is out on the podcast. As always, a huge, huge thank you to Clay for the time on a busy, busy week for him, because obviously the penultimate race of the season does not wait for anybody, and Brent Gamble of NASCAR for helping coordinate that conversation. Always great to work with Brent, and always great to chat with Clay. All right, Neff, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. You remember when we went behind the dumpster at the Martinsville hot dog stand and we ate those dumpster dogs, right? You remember like it was yesterday, because it was one of my favorite memories with you and my favorite memories at the racetrack.
Absolutely, man. I mean, they were tasty. They're Martinsville dogs. You can't
beat them. They tasted great.
Absolutely.
And you are the hot dog man, by the way. That's part of the reason why I had you on, because if there's anybody that knows a thing or two about Martinsville dogs, it is Mike Neff.
There is still video evidence on the worldwide interweb of me eating 20 full-done Martinsville hot dogs. They weren't plain. They were fully loaded. I did 20 of them to raise money for the Racing Brotherhood Foundation, and did it right there at the start-finish line of Martinsville Speedway.
Let's unpack this a little bit, because I knew that you have done this, but I want to get into the nitty-gritty. Did you eat them all at once? Was it like a contest when you were going fast, or was it all throughout the day?
No, it was just me. There was a handful of people there videotaping it, and I had two bags with 10 hot dogs in each one. And I was a little disappointed. It took me almost 45 minutes to get it done. I thought I could do it faster than that, but it was continuous, straight, one after the other, 20 Martinsville loaded hot dogs.
So you're not Joey Chestnut is what you're saying.
Nah, well, I didn't have any water. Water makes a big difference in that whole competitive eating thing.
Mine Did you have anything to drink?
No, it was just straight up hot dogs.
Whose fault was that?
We didn't really plan it as well as we probably should have.
Okay, I'm gathering.
Chair, but I mean, there were drivers walking by. There were crew chiefs walking by. I had a lot of encouragement from a lot of friends. Yeah. But, yeah, we pulled off 20 hot dogs in about 40, 45 minutes.
And the thing is about you, Neff, for those that don't know, you genuinely enjoy the hot dogs, right? Because some people it's hit or miss, but you love these things, as do I, by the way.
Yeah, the Jesse Jones hot dog is incredibly underrated. And I hated that they went away from them. I'm glad they have gotten back to the Jesse Jones dog because it just
– that was sacrilege.
The iconic Martinsville dog.
Besides the 20 that you had on the front stretch to raise all that money for Racing Brotherhood, which was awesome, what's the record for you that you've had in a single day? Because you've been to Martinsville a time or two in your days, and I'm sure that you've been, whether it's in the grandstands or in the infield in the media center working, you've had your fair share of dogs on a leisurely pace.
I mean, when they did the STP thing a couple years ago in the media center, I was at a disadvantage because I could only be there for Sunday, and there were some people that were eating all weekend. But again, I rolled in on Sunday and put down, I can't remember, it was either 28 or 30 hot dogs throughout the day. And yeah, it was impressive. I impressed myself that day. And there was dispute amongst the winner because he claimed to have eaten a lot, but there was no evidence of him consuming more than about four hot dogs because he would like leave the media center and then come back in and then write four more dogs by his name. I sat there in the media center and there was a rolled up piece of foil for every one of the hot dogs I consumed. And I guess it was 28 or 30, but it was an effort to say the least.
Well, this weekend I'm going to the track, so I will have some for you honorarily. I'm going to have my fair share. I don't know if I'm going to get up to the 30s. I don't know if I'm going to get up to the 20s. I don't know if I'm going to crack double digits. We'll see. Trying to watch my figure here. But you can assure.
You only go once or twice a year. You can work it off.
Yeah, that's fair. Just expect a notification on your phone on Saturday or Sunday with a picture of a hot dog on the front stretch from me. Okay? That's all I'm saying. All right. Let's talk some racing. What do you say? The penultimate race of the season. It is Martinsville Speedway. Clay told us about it in our conversation. It seems to just always deliver. And the points battle this year, it's just as close as it has ever been. You got Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin, 34 and 32 points above the cut line, respectively. So they're not mortal locks. The only lock is Kyle Larson. But if Chase and Denny have solid days, which they both should because they're both solid at Martinsville, they should be in good shape. But the battle on the cut line is real, real close. Kyle Busch, 1 point to the good. Ryan Blaney, 1 point below. Martin Truex Jr., 3 points below. He knows a thing or two about winning at Martinsville. And Brad Keselowski, somehow, some way, is only 6 points below the cut line. What do you think we're going to see, Neff? It's so unpredictable to see how close these guys are. And we saw last year, drivers are willing to do whatever, whenever, however it takes to try to get into that championship four.
I would like to be a Debbie Downer here and say it's going to be chalk because 95% of the time in this deal, the way the final four come into the final race is the way they go out. But I just feel like it's going to be different this year. I mean, I think Truex has been really strong there the last three or four times they've been there. Obviously, Denny knows how to get around the place. And then Kyle Busch, I still, and call me a Kyle Busch homer, I still feel like this is one of those moments where Kyle manages to make the final race and then pulls off the championship. And it's because of Larson having like some weird thing happen near the end of the race in Phoenix. And the fan base just absolutely implodes. NASCAR Twitter erupts. There's literally a mushroom cloud comes out of the Twitter headquarters. It'd just be insane. But I feel like Kyle, I don't know. He just seems, and I know he lost his mind briefly this weekend at Kansas, I feel like he's just more level-headed than he's been in a long time. And I feel like he knows what he needs to do this weekend. And, you know, barring weird setup issues, which they tried that last year I believe is in this race where they tried Denny's setup and it was just a disaster for him.
Yeah.
So I feel like going into this one, they're going to do their own thing on their own notes, like they've been doing since he got out of the sim world the last 5 or 6 weeks. And I feel like he's going to be in contention. But if I had to pick any of those guys, I think Truex is the guy that's going to come through out of those three or four.
I'll get my thoughts on that in a sec. But how poetic would it be for this generation car with this specific package, even though Phoenix is not a 550 track, how poetic would it be for Kyle Busch to kind of get in, quote unquote, by the skin of his teeth, win the championship, and that's how this generation of car goes out? I feel like that'd be pretty poetic.
That would be true poetic justice.
Yeah, yeah, it would be. I agree with you about Truex, though. It seems like whenever you go to Martinsville, and yes, it's a pun on his name, it is Martinsville. Like, he is always running up front. Whether or not he wins the race, that's not out of the question right now. But it seems like no matter when they go to Martinsville, no matter what crew chief is atop the pit box, no matter what team he's racing for, what manufacturer, Truex is always good at Martinsville Speedway. He's great at Richmond too. He's solid at Bristol. So I think out of the guys below the cut line, which is Blaney, Truex, Keselowski, I think you got to look at Truex for sure. Because I really think that he has a good chance of winning the race and getting his way into the final four. And another thing, six of these eight drivers, not including Larson and Blaney, they're former winners of Martinsville. Larson and Blaney are the only two drivers, I believe, to not have won races at Martinsville in the past. Denny's done it before. Chase did it last year. Kyle and Truex have their fair share. And Brad, I remember he dominated a year or two when he led over 300 of the 500 laps, maybe even 400. So it's not like these guys don't know what they're doing at the paperclip. And it's not that Martin knows better than any of these guys either. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brad Keselowski wins. I wouldn't be surprised if Denny puts a whooping on him. I really wouldn't be surprised if Blaney wins either. Like, this is one of the most unpredictable rounds that we have, or races in this round that we have, because there's so many good drivers at this specific track, and the points are just so tight, and they're going to be fluctuating every single lap. I'm going to be staring at that NBC ticker because we're going to see things going up, down, sideways, all race long for all 500 laps.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts, and I'm with you on Keselowski. In all honesty, watching them the last, month even,
has been
one of those deals where you feel like it's just the story being written of a championship season. Like, they faced this adversity and they overcame it. They faced that adversity and overcame it. There's just, they have been doing things that championship teams do to maximize bad days. And I mean, Kansas was another one. They got the absolute most points out of that day that they possibly could. Yeah. And I could see that being the story at the end of this whole thing, that they win a championship, and you can go back and look at a dozen different races where they could have thrown in the towel and lost the season and they didn't do it.
Did you write him off? Because I did. I assume once the Roush thing was out there, it was going to kind of just be like, he'll make the playoffs. He'll probably get to the second round, and then the performance will taper off. He'll be doing stuff with Roush, and they won't really be focused. But, I mean, hand up. I admit it. I was wrong. I did not expect them to be, A, at this point, and B, this competitive right now.
Yeah. I didn't think they were that coming into the playoffs. I just didn't think they were running well enough to advance this far. And they have absolutely, all of Penske has stepped up their game once the playoffs started.
All right, so I'll put you on the spot then. We know Larson's into the final four. We know that. Chase and Denny are over 30 to the good. I'm going to give my championship four picks. I'll go to you next. Besides Larson, I think Chase and Denny are going to remain above the cut line as long as catastrophe does not happen. I think Truex is going to win the race and get his way in, and Kyle Busch is going to miss out narrowly. I really do. So I'll go Truex, Denny, Chase Elliott to join Kyle Larson in Phoenix. What say you?
Obviously Larson's in. Denny and Chase, I agree with. I am with you that Martin Truex is winning the race, but I am with you that Kyle Busch dumps him coming out of turn four to win the race and advance to the final four.
Ooh, so you think Kyle's going to dump his teammate to win and get in?
Yes.
See, I honestly could not see that happening. I don't think Kyle would do that. There's some drivers that would. I don't think Kyle would, especially to a teammate. I think he couldn't do it.
I I think there are extenuating circumstances. I think something happens earlier in the race that leads to this situation.
Okay. But that's fair.
That's my scenario. I see it coming out where they're like literally, you know, beating and banging over the last 20 or 30 laps. And it comes down to coming out of turn four and Truex doesn't give him enough room. And Kyle's like, I'm done with it, and just loops him and takes it.
Speaking of poetic justice, remember Kyle got spun out by Harvick last year because Harvick was trying to get in there. That'd be some poetic justice if Kyle does the same to his teammate at the same track on the same final lap trying to get into the final four. I know it's all hypothetical, but, man, we're writing some poetry here, Neff.
Right, and don't forget about Truex getting moved by Logano. Same thing.
Oh, he still hasn't forgotten. He won the battle, but he ain't going to win the damn war to whatever later he wins the war. So we know how that turned out. It's going to be an interesting race, though. I can't wait for the action. Martinsville always hits, and I think, as Clay said in our interview, it's a really good place to have the penultimate race of the season because it's one thing to decide your champion at a track. Like, that's great. But to have eight drivers vying for four spots, that's why Clay really likes this spot that Martinsville's in, and I think it's a great spot for it to have as well.
I agree.
Checkered flag.
Checkered flag is out on the podcast this week. Neff, before we get to our picks and our bets for the week, we do our do's and our don'ts for the week. I will go quickly and I'll throw it over to you. Pretty simple do, pretty simple don't for me. My do is to eat your hot dogs this weekend. If you're going as a media member, if you're going as a fan, if you're a driver or crew member listening, the hot dog stand is open for business. So do eat your hot dogs. My don't, besides don't eat as many as Neff because you'll probably get sick, is to expect Kyle Larson to win four in a row. Larson has said himself that when they went there earlier this season and ran inside the top five, he was overjoyed. His words, not mine. And he's historically not been great at Martinsville. That's not to say that he's necessarily going to run 25th or 20th, but I don't think Larson is going to be one of the favorites in the first breath to win the race on Sunday. Plus, even though he has nothing to lose, I still think that he's going to probably be a little respectful of those other seven guys that are racing to compete with him, because knowing Larson as I do and seeing how we have seen him race in the past, I feel like he's kind of going to give the other guys some room. So, Neff, what is your do and what is your don't for this weekend's penultimate race at Martinsville Speedway?
Do take in all that is the Martinsville weekend. Southern Virginia is one of the most beautiful areas of our country. The Wood Brothers shop is not that far away in Stuart. The downtown area of Martinsville is just, it's Americana. Go check it out. Just enjoy Southern Virginia. Make a day or two trip out of it and go up and take it all in. Don't plan on getting to the track right before the green flag. You really only have one way in and out of Martinsville Speedway, people, and the traffic backs up. Plan ahead, get there plenty early so that you can take in the whole experience and the pageantry of it. One of my favorite parts of Martinsville is the national anthem with local bands playing it. It is just, it's one of my favorite parts of the weekend. So just enjoy Virginia, especially the Martinsville area. And when you're sitting there looking at the modern amenities that are all around that place, don't forget, this is still the only track that is on the schedule now that was on the very first schedule that was ever run.
The oldest track on the schedule. That's right. Yep. That's right. How about your don't? What you got?
My don't was don't get there right before the green flag.
Oh, right. I got
there,
you.
Get there early so that you're not dealing with a bunch of traffic.
You actually made me have to rethink my Sunday plans because I work Sirius in the morning, and I was going to drive to the track after I finish my Sirius shift, but that may be cutting it a little close with the traffic, so maybe I'll have to get to the track early and take my Sirius shift from there. Peek behind the curtain for you guys. Maybe I'll have to hit up Brent Gamble and see if they can unlock the track and unlock the media center for me at 6 in the morning. Who knows? All right, I told you that we were going to do some bets, but actually we're recording this a little bit earlier than usual this week. So courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook in association with William Hill, there are no odds or matchups listed right now for the Martinsville race. So we're going to do a little audible, and I'll give you some playoff driver matchups on the fly, head-to-head, whoever finishes higher. Are you ready?
Go for it.
All right. You said that Kyle's going to wreck Martin coming to the checkered flag, So I think I know your answer, but Kyle Busch versus Martin Truex Jr.
Like I said, I'm taking Kyle Busch.
Okay, I'll go Truex. How about Blaney versus Logano?
Ooh, I like that one. I'm going to go with Blaney. I think he's been a little stronger at Martinsville the last year and a half.
I also just realized I didn't mention Logano in the previous segment because I didn't have him on my stat sheet, but it's because he's basically in a must-win scenario. The other three drivers, they're able to point their way in technically, but Logano, he's got a win to get in. He's won at Martinsville before. I just think that he may be pushing a little too hard and he may make some people a little bit frustrated, that I will also give the edge to Ryan Blaney in a career season, what it's been so far for him. How about Kyle Larson versus Chase Elliott?
Ooh. That's a tough call there. I think it depends on how the race unfolds. Because I think whichever one of them appears to be the more dominant, the other one's not going to do anything to mess them up. But, I mean, it's 2021. I'm taking Kyle Larson.
I'm going to go Chase Elliott just to be a little bit different. Plus what I mentioned about Larson, how he's not that great at Martinsville historically. I'll go with Chase Elliott. All right, last but not least, we'll go a little off the wall. Let's go mid-pack because this is where you can really make some money if these odds are listed for you. Bubba Wallace versus Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Bubba Wallace all the way.
Bubba Wallace. Got one there in trucks before.
Bubba Wallace has won at Martinsville before, and he is better on short flat tracks. Now, you get high bank short tracks, I'm on Stenhouse all day long. But the flatter, shorter tracks, I'll go with Bubba Wallace.
How about Rick Ware versus Quinn Huff? I said Rick Ware. I meant Cody Ware. My bad.
I want to go with Huff.
Yeah. Huff and Puff your way to a matchup win right there. Neff, it's been fun catching up with you, man. I will, again, be on the lookout for that tweet with the hot dog. I will have some for you this weekend. And enjoy yourself this weekend. Hope everything's going well with you down in Myrtle Beach.
We are wide open down here, as always, having a great time. And I will be looking forward to the tweet. I've loved being with you all season long, and I look forward to doing some stuff in the off season.
Absolutely. And thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Front Stretch Podcast. As always, if you like what you heard, leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast player of choice. And if we're not available, drop us a line, and we'll try to rectify that issue for you. For Mike Neff and everybody here at Front Stretch, I am Davey Siegel. Going to the track this weekend. Stay up to date with my content on Twitter and our content at frontstretch.com. Be good, everybody. Enjoy the racing this weekend.